Hi, I'm Ethan Suplee. Welcome to American Glutton. Outside of acting, my two favorite things to do are diet and eat. I have a very complicated relationship with food, and on this podcast, we're going to talk about all of it. Food as entertainment, food as sport, food as fuel. I'll talk to experts and the average person, just like you and me. Today, I sit down and have a conversation with one of my oldest friends in the world, Kevin Connolly. It's unclear whether I interviewed him or he interviewed me, but I think it's an important episode just to give you more backstory on my journey. Kevin Connolly.
Are we officially running?
We are officially running. Right. Welcome to the show, American Glutton.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about what a glutton you are. No, I'm just kidding. You are not a glutton.
For punishment.
I actually am really excited to talk to you about this because it's not something we talk about often. But I have known you for 25 plus years.
Early 93.
Yeah. So that's a long time.
26 years.
26 years. And you knew me. So for 9 of those years, I had no interest in health. It didn't really occur to me. It wasn't something I thought about.
Right.
I think in that time period, I went on one diet that a buddy said, like, hey, there's this crazy guy doing a crazy diet. Do you want to try it? I tried it. Didn't do it for very long. But I want some perspective as somebody I knew what that was like for you. Because the other interesting thing is we're adults now. When you and I see one of our friends being particularly unhealthy, we say something. And right. And it's gentle. There's no, you know, we're not necessarily going like, hey, you're fucking drinking all the time or whatever it is, but we would say something now. And I feel like I didn't experience so much of that, but I imagine it was being discussed.
Yeah. I mean, well, the funny thing is it's kind of in a few parts. First off, what would happen is like we were also such and still are a tight-knit group,
yeah.
Right? So it would usually come from the outside as like, hey, you know, somebody should talk to Ethan. Like, and tell him what.
Right.
I always say this, you're our smartest friend. Like, you know.
Right.
What? Tell him what?
Yeah.
That he can't go on like this? Like, fuck no, he knows that.
Yeah.
You know? It was a weird thing because of how much everybody loved you.
Yeah.
But also, too, what can you say at a certain point?
Yeah.
You know, and we are all thinking it. And I don't know if you remember this. The one time I was involved with another buddy of ours trying to say something to you, it immediately blew up in our face. Like,
I don't remember.
Like, I think you hung up on us.
Right. I probably did.
Well, I remember I was on a TV show called Unhappily Ever After. So this is probably what got it. So now we're talking 95,
right.
96. And it was the day that Chris Farley died.
Right.
And I can remember it was like in those days, like however with the three-way calling, it wasn't like you added the call. It was like you had to hang up and go to a dial tone, dial the other number. And another buddy of ours, and we called Ethan, and in hindsight, this is like 2 hours after the news of Chris Farley dying. Obviously, Ethan is thinking it. He's aware of it. I mean, you might have even known him. Did you know him a little bit?
I didn't know him, but I mean, he was like, yeah, he was the guy.
Right.
I knew.
Right. So the conversation might have been 30 seconds long.
Right.
And in hindsight, it's like a bad approach. Like Chris Farley said, obviously you're thinking, we're all thinking the same thing. And, you know, you got defensive would be an understatement. You hung up on us.
Yeah.
And I can remember going, well, that went well.
I've utterly blocked that out. I mean, I remember it happening now, but I hadn't thought of it. But you saying that, I remember another call, and I don't know if it was before or after, but I got the call out of a deep sleep, Biggie died. And I thought it was going to be
that.
You got to go on a diet, motherfucker. And I was like, oh, God.
But he got shot.
And then it was followed up with he got shot. And I felt relief.
That wasn't going to be more pressure on you.
That he was murdered was a relief to me. I was like, okay, so we're avoiding that conversation.
Right.
I promise you I won't get shot.
Right.
It was literally like what I was thinking. But that is, I do remember that. Yeah, I was kind of just.
But also too, like, I think the drugs came later for you.
Yeah.
And you're obviously not a drug guy. So your immediate defense was to jump to that being the reason.
Right.
Like, I don't do drugs, so that's not going to happen to me.
Yeah.
He died of drug overdose and this and that. And it was just like, immediately, the second you picked up the phone, the conversation.
It didn't go well.
Conversation was doomed from the top.
So. Yeah. Well, I got to say, thank God, because I really was like, Yeah, my friends didn't give me a... It wasn't really ever a thing, but I know you guys felt it.
Oh, it was a thing. Yeah. It was a big thing. And also, too, like, there's part of us that we shared, that I shared with you, was sort of being defensive.
Yeah.
For you, right?
Yeah.
I remember, I know you told the Jim Caviezel story.
Right.
Listening to you tell the story, I then kind of remember something about it. You know, because listen, obviously, I don't think Jim Caviezel's intentions were bad.
No, I don't either.
But on the other hand, it's like... Fuck off.
Right.
Mind your own business. What are you talking about? Like, you know, maybe it worked. Maybe he got through to you. Maybe he did. Maybe he didn't. But, like, he could have killed you.
I mean, listen.
You know, he could have sent you on a bender. Who knows? I mean, it's like, I don't know.
I was always very protected. If anybody was going to give me a dirty look, we were going to have a fight.
Right.
And that guy was going to lose.
Right. But also, too, I was always immediately aware of, like, if we went into, like, we showed up at a restaurant together. I was with you and thinking, like... Okay, where are we going to put, just to, for Ethan to be comfortable?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the other thing too, and I said this to you, that people don't real. I think most people don't realize about you is how big you are.
Yeah.
You weren't like a little fat guy. You're right. You're tall. You're big. What are you, 6'1"?
Stuff the little fat guy.
Wait,
in
what
the
are you, 6'1",
6'2"?
Yeah, 6'1". Wait, you're 6'1", you've got big hands. Like, you're just a big guy.
I was 6'2". I somehow lost an inch when I dieted.
Add the weight to it, then you're massive, but you're just a big guy regardless.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, it would always be like, we would go and I would always aware, like, we got to just make sure that you were comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, because we shared in that sort of anxiety of like making sure that you were comfortable when we went to a restaurant or wherever it was. It was like the first thing is like, okay, we got to get Ethan squared away.
Yeah. I remember I was thinking about this the other day. I believe you were in the car and Scott Bloom and another buddy was seeing this girl and it was like a very new thing and he really wanted to impress her. And we drove somewhere and on the drive, she started being a little bitchy and acting like he wasn't taking her somewhere nice or something like this. And I remember he turned to her and he went, "Ethan's in the fucking back," as though, look at what I've done for you.
Right.
I put you in the front seat and my friend Ethan, who doesn't fit back there, is in the back seat.
If that doesn't say
that's it.
I like you.
I've fucking gone above and beyond. And I was like, wow, yeah, that was a thing. That was a thing. I never sat in the back.
Also, too, you had the coolest car. How bad do you wish?
I wish I had it still.
That you hung onto that car. Ethan had like the last cool model of the Chevy Impala.
Yeah.
And you had cool rims.
Yeah, it was awesome.
We both lived in the valley, so we would go out. And the funny thing is, at the time, we thought Ethan was sober, but he wasn't.
Yeah, it was nuts.
not the designated driver.
Right.
Because I remember the ups and downs. I remember when you talked about, what's the thing called when you ride around in circles on the bike, like on the, with the rent, like the...
Oh, yeah, the velodrome.
Right.
Yeah.
That was like a big thing.
Yeah.
Where you
I
were
was
like...
killing it on bicycles.
It.
Yeah, I was really thin.
And then you fell.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, it was a terrible
You had like a
fall.
Terrible bike accident.
Yeah,
which...
37 stitches in my head.
Yeah.
Bones were visible in my hands.
Like he wiped out like on a high-end bike ride.
I think I remember this story from your wife's
point of view.
And
busted you open pretty good, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the guy I was riding with, I hope I still have it, made a really great, you know, you used to be able to like do a book on iPhoto. You could like pick a bunch of pictures and they'd send you a book.
Yeah.
He had a book of my bicycle accident. And one of the pictures was just a pool of blood on the concrete.
And that was a setback for you too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, well, it broke that
I couldn't
pattern.
Ride.
You couldn't ride.
For a bit. I did go riding again after that for a while, but wasn't the same. And I also had like a lot of pressure from my wife going like, look, you just were in the hospital from doing this. What are you doing?
Right.
You also have to get a job. You're not going to get a job if you fall down again. It's like setbacks.
And it was also one of those like those bikes where you have to lock your feet in. Like,
yeah.
You can't even bail out on this bike.
No.
You're like locked in.
There was
bike,
no bailing out. You go really fast. I was going downhill. It was a terrible accident. My skull was visible. My face is still a little weird. Like, I still think one of my eyebrows is lower. It was a bad accident.
I have a good picture of you.
On the velodrome?
Like, on the velodrome. Yeah, like, almost like horizontal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Those, that kind
yeah,
of,
you're at, like, 33 degrees.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. And you're riding in an absolute straight line. It looks like you're turning to go in circles, but you can take your hands off and just pedal.
Just
and
pedal.
You are going in a straight line the whole time. The bike doesn't turn. It's wild.
But you're more weights now.
I'm almost only weights now.
Right.
I do about a half an hour to 45 minutes of cardio a day. And even that, I don't want my heart rate to get, I just want abs.
Right.
So once I have abs and somebody gets a picture of my abs.
Just one picture of the abs.
I mean, listen, and in fairness.
You sent me a picture of not that long ago. Knocking on the door.
The abs are, with the right lighting, it looks like I have a six pack, but I want to be able to like dig around in the holes.
You want a real six pack.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I just did a DEXA scan to make sure I'm not losing muscle, and I had gone from 16% body fat to 14% body fat on a DEXA scan, and in the last 2 months, I lost 6 pounds of fat, which is great.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's wild. Yeah. It's wild because prior to that, I could lose a couple pounds a week, no problem, but I was losing muscle too.
Yeah.
So now I'm really...
I feel like in the last, every time I've seen you socially in the last like month, people are like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Oh my God, look at Ethan. Like maybe 2 months. It's been just, it's drastic.
I'm just following what the bodybuilders do now. I'm going to get my abs and then I'm done. Then I'm going to be a normal 15% body fat human being for a while.
How often do you do the cheat meal?
No, I don't really do a cheat meal.
Not at all? Did you have a cheat meal on Thanksgiving, Christmas?
I have a certain amount of protein I have to eat every day, a certain amount of carbs I'm allowed to eat.
But surely you can take, if it's like call one cheat meal a month, how much could that set you back?
I didn't go crazy on Thanksgiving. I had a bite of a pie that one of my kids made.
That's it? That's your cheat meal?
And I had a couple bites of stuffing. But it wasn't really a cheat meal. I have been thinking about there's a place in Silver Lake called Burgers Never Say Die, and I've been going like, I probably deserve a cheat meal. I might go eat a couple burgers.
Mm-hmm. It's also, it could be good that you go in the next day, you know, like—
Crush it.
Right, just crush it in the gym.
Yeah.
So you'd be that much stronger.
Yeah, and the really interesting thing about what I'm doing now is there's no real worry that I'm going to gain weight. And anything that's a cheat meal like that is just going to make sure I don't lose muscle. So, you know, as long as I don't have a week of cheat meals, I'm safe. A cheat meal would be fine. And I just haven't had one in a while.
Are you not doing the cheat meal because it's like, is it a mental thing? Like if I have like,
I just am so, I'm so vain right now and so interested in abs that the cheat meal is
just not worth it.
What's it going to do?
Even though it's not going to hurt you,
it's not
going to
hurt me.
All,
no,
right?
No,
it's just
not
more
at all.
Of a psychological.
It's just not, okay.
Yeah, but there is some worry of like regression and going back into weird habits. You know, I go to the gym every day, and it's one of my favorite parts of the day. But I know that if I miss the gym for a few days, going to the gym suddenly becomes a chore.
It does become an issue.
Yeah, so there's that worry, like. I couldn't miss it tomorrow.
Right.
I would feel like shit. But if I had to miss it for a few days, we went to New York for Thanksgiving and Brandy was like annoyed at how often I went to the gym, which was once a day.
Right.
I'm like, it's right. The same as when we're here.
Right.
What do you think? Is there something different about this time around? I mean, you're definitely locked into a new gear and a new level.
Yeah.
But is it seeing the results?
I think it's a couple things. I think, first of all, we're doing this. We're talking about it. We're being public. When I lost weight before, I never talked about it. I just, that was what I did. And I wasn't hiding it because that's what I did. But I wasn't openly saying, like, let's actually talk about this. You know what I mean? So I think this could hopefully keep me focused. But I also got so thin before. I got to 220. I'm 265 today. And 220 is really small for me.
Yeah, and again, to the point that you're just a big guy.
Yeah.
Big features.
Yeah.
Hands, everything about you. Yeah. Big head.
I also was 220 without abs, so I had a lot less muscle.
Keep talking about
that. the vein abs.
Well, you know, sometimes that's what keeps it going.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tricky because once I get abs and I get my picture of abs and, you know, I'm objectified in a magazine like Playgirl, just kidding, I'm going to have a new goal. And right. I don't know what that will be.
Right.
But you feel the podcast and like openly talking about it is a, I won't say therapy, but there's like a feeling of strength behind that?
I do. I find the way people eat to be interesting. So I'm talk to lots of people about it and fucking everybody talks to me about it now.
Mm-hmm. Almost annoyingly so.
To my wife, it's super annoying. To me, I'm always interested in talking about it. Right. You know, after you've explained this version of your diet 30 times, it's kind of like, okay, like here we go again. Let's talk about macros and calories and all of that. And it's becomes annoying, but I'm really interested in how people eat. And I don't think since like early 2000s, there has not been a period of my life where I haven't thought about what I'm eating. Before that, I didn't really care. I knew that there would be health repercussions, right, but I didn't give a shit, really. It just didn't really occur to me that often. And if it did, it was charged emotionally, and so I would escape thinking about it by doing something else. So I hope being open about it keeps me focused, because I'm much happier right now than I was 100 pounds heavier than this.
When I think back about your sort of journey, I always believed that you could get to a point where your health wasn't in danger.
Right.
I didn't think it would be physically possible,
right,
to look the way that you look. Like, mm-hmm, okay, he's out of the danger zone,
right,
with regards to just the weight that he's carrying around and his heart and all that, but to become what you've become in the last, I just wouldn't have thought that it was physically possible. Like, at a certain point, like, yeah, you just can't recover,
yeah,
from that.
Yeah.
I mean, did you know that we'd even be having a conversation about abs?
Never. I never did. I mean, I thought I could lose weight, and then I started riding bicycles thinking, well, this will be, I'll just do this.
Right, just shedding pounds.
Yeah,
and I'll lose weight. The only thing that was important, not shape and muscle.
No, I never really thought of that until I had lost a bunch of weight and had no real upper body muscle definition. I had very strong muscular legs, but I never, riding a bike and you're eating as little as possible and just doing cardio
burning
all day.
Burning calories and just mm-hmm. Right.
Burning your muscle. And so, and then I started lifting weights, and then I just was like, fuck it, I'm not going to diet for a while. And I gained a shitload of weight.
Bad weight?
Bad
or
weight.
Like muscle weight?
Probably both. I definitely put on muscle, because as of today, I have 220 pounds of lean mass. A lot of that is muscle. Most of that is muscle. So I definitely built muscle, but I also put on a lot of fat. And for me, it's very important to have a goal, have a physical goal. You know, even if I get down to the idea of like, what are my health goals? Or if somebody is attacking one of my kids, what are my physical goals? What do I want to be able to do to somebody doing that? And I don't want to be winded. I want to have the energy to like handle that situation if it arises and protect my wife and kids.
So right now the goal is abs. And then
that's
once
the
you
goal.
Achieve that, you go, I want to be able to do a mixed martial arts for 3 rounds.
Right.
3 5-minute rounds.
Yeah.
Right. And now
wrestling,
you're working
and
on
kickboxing.
Whatever that is.
Yeah.
It's about setting goals. But I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. You know, like I said, I think back a lot of those times, and I example wise, I think like the Jim Caviezel, but there was versions of that.
Yeah.
Do you remember, the story, I just remember being at the party, a certain actress said something to you at a party.
Let's just say the story.
I mean, it was for
Yes. It was at the premiere for American History X.
Okay. So, first of all, Ethan gets this role in American History X. And like, you know, as a group of actors, like, mm-hmm. everybody's going on auditions. This was like,
it was a really major. Cool movie. Yeah.
Massive, yeah. massive role and just an epic get. Like,
yeah.
You just went in and you like got the guy and you became the guy.
Yeah.
And you had the tattoos and, you know, Ethan, the nicest guy in the world, would walk into the room and make people nervous. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, we all know that it's a movie. And
right.
Ethan's not a skinhead in real life. And furthermore, you would think that other actors
would know that too.
That as well. And I believe, was it at the premiere of
the
movie?
Premiere like, party. Yeah.
Somebody said something stupid to Ethan.
Oh, I fucking yelled at her.
And would she write you a letter or something?
She did. She wrote me an apology letter. And then I was also probably drunk, so my reaction was probably clouded by being drunk. But
Whoa.
I was pissed. I think she called me a fat fuck or something like that.
Like truthfully, like and also too about his, we'll call it a successful performance.
Yeah.
What is she talking about?
Yeah. Right?
So she's talking about his performance in the movie at the premiere. She comes up to him and says this. And like to blame it on alcohol, I mean, I don't know. I don't know that flies at 10 o'clock in the morning.
It's a fucking rough thing to hear. You're stoked.
You went to the premiere of the movie,
and some fancy actor says to you, oh, you were that fat fuck or something like that, some version
of
that.
Or it was like, hey, nice to meet you. You fat fuck or something like that.
Yeah,
like,
something
oh my
like
God.
That.
What on
yeah.
God's green earth?
And I just fucking lit into her. Like,
and rightfully
you,
so.
Bitch.
And then I think everybody else did too.
Yeah.
She probably went home.
I had all my friends and a bunch of people told her off. And then she wrote me an apology letter. I think she said basically she thought I was so good and that role conjured that idea in her head and she had
clearly.
To
t-
tell me. Wow. And I was like,
there's better ways to compliment somebody's performance.
Yeah. Yeah. God, I forgot.
And also,
about
too,
that.
As a, you know, like you really were great in that movie, and you were scared. It was a scary role. The whole movie is.
It's so
scary. To this day.
Yeah, it's.
It just is fucking disturbing. The movie is a disturbing movie, and you're so good in the movie, and you're like, there's something about like your character and like everything about it is just awful, right? Yeah. But that's what you're supposed to do. I mean, that the desired effect is to of a movie is to hit on those cylinders like that. And it's just a. Again, I'm going to put her in the Jim Caviezel category. It's just a weird thing to say to somebody you don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, it's strange.
And that doesn't sound like it's coming out of concern.
No, I don't think it was coming. I think she saw the movie and she was like, this fucking, fuck this guy, this fat fuck.
But she's an actress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like maybe if it was like somebody that knows nothing and is like disconnected from the industry. But again, it's funny. I feel like I keep reminding you of these stories that you didn't, that you don't
know. No, but this is great. This is what we're doing. Yeah.
That's a terrible story. I never forgot that.
Yeah.
God.
I remember that very clearly.
Jim
Caviezel
one, once I heard you say it, I was like, fuck, I remember that.
Yeah.
The Chris Farley thing. There's just like a few of these stories. Yeah.
And for me, Biggie dying was a scary moment that we almost had to talk about.
How sad is that? That you were. I mean, obviously, you're not relieved that anybody got shot. We're not implying.
Of course not. But I'm relieved
in your
that
mind that like, this is not going to come back to me.
Yeah. Right. No, it was tragic because we really loved him.
Right.
We listened to him a lot.
Oh, we lived by his.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd think there was only one or two albums. We like listened to the same four
right.
albums. It was a big deal for everybody.
Yeah. And my fear upon hearing that he had
now
passed
I have to
away,
deal with this about
I was like, mm-hmm. oh, God, right. it's going to be this. It's going to be weight loss.
Yeah.
Right.
And there was a sick moment of, oh, thank God I escaped that conversation.
Right. This isn't about me.
No.
This conversation isn't coming back to me. They're calling. I'm getting this call because people know I love Biggie.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Do any other stories like that stick out?
I remember once in Mexico going into a bar with like military people and one of them said something to me and I actually let it slide because I thought like if I react, my friends are going to react and then like I don't know how many people in this bar this guy's with. I know.
Right. Well, you want to avoid that, obviously.
Right. Like, but also like anybody. If it's not that, then it's me and all my friends beating some guy up. I don't want to do that right. because he made some shitty comment. Like
you just had to take some of them on the chin.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And pretend I didn't hear it,
right.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then there were some altercations.
There are a handful of like stories I remember going, it's just hard for me to wrap my head around. And the craziest thing about it is that it sounds like maybe it did, I'm not saying that it worked,
it
but
fucking
somehow,
did.
Somehow it jogged something in your mind.
It was really going like, I'm an adult. And he's coming from a position where his integrity is telling him he has to communicate this to me. It's not my thing.
Right.
It's not something I would ever want to say to a stranger. Also because I'm kind of a relativist where I go like, I don't know what his path is. I don't know what's right for everyone. Mm-hmm. What's right for me, what my health concerns are, doesn't have to be true for anybody else. You know what I mean? Like, it's only true for me. So why would I want to project onto somebody else what I think is right? So I wouldn't do it. It's not something I'm interested in doing. I'm glad
maybe
he did
now?
It. No. I mean, I'm interested if somebody says to me, like
if you saw somebody that you felt were in your spot 10 years ago, would you feel the need or feel inclined to say, hey, man, not trying to get in your business, but like, this is me, and this is me then, this is me now, it can be done. Like, maybe not talk about him going to hell.
Right.
But like, maybe words of encouragement as opposed to...
If somebody expressed an interest or a need to change, 1,000,000%,
right.
I would
You'd
have...
be happy to do it.
Happy
mm-hmm.
to talk
course,
to somebody.
Right?
If somebody was having trouble with drugs and alcohol and expressed a need to change, happy to do it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But beyond that, I don't feel that what is right for me is necessarily right for anyone else mm-hmm. in a way that I can project it onto them without them saying, I need help or I want help or whatever it is. So I would never do that. I would never go up to somebody and say, here's what you need. I know what you need. Because I don't. I don't believe that I do.
So Ethan and I did a movie called John Q together.
Yes. And we've done a couple movies together.
Yeah, we have. Ethan and I were in Toronto for 4 months. The Sutton Place, where it's like a mini apartment. I mean, I've stayed in worse places, stayed in better places, and it's a little apartment. I mean, it's a living room, bedroom, kitchenette balcony.
Yeah.
Right? And also, too, we were next door neighbors for 4 months, and we were working together every day. And that was a point where I was just like, man,
this is not good.
Well, I mean, you do have the thought of like, look, this ends one of two ways.
Yeah. But that was also drugs.
Well,
and that I will say about my friends, you guys kind of drew a hard line about right. drugs. My weight was really touchy, but when it was drugs and you guys were aware of it, there were interventions. There was like, this is unacceptable. And I don't disagree with that, because here's the difference. In a group, you all have functioning roles in the group.
Right.
And I entered that group fat. I was fat when we met. So nothing had changed about my functioning role as far as being fat. This is me rationalizing it, right? But the minute I was doing drugs, I became a liability to the group.
Right.
Because I was not behaving.
Right, we're not talking about like a bag of weed.
No, it was real drugs. Right, real I was drugs. A drug addict.
Kind of drugs that everybody goes to jail for.
Right, jail or they die or they OD, right. You know, and they die. So yeah. I remember deep concern at that time.
Well,
period.
I also, and also too, when you're essentially living with it, by the way, to this day, I still haven't seen it.
Right.
Trying to kick that.
Yeah.
Something that hard. And I can remember a Saturday, and all he did, you know, he wasn't doing drugs, but he was just sleeping, you know? And I remember saying like, Ethan, come on, man, we're going to get out. It's a nice day. We're going to walk down the block. We're going to get a meal. We get some fresh air. You got to get out of this room. We got out of the room. We walked, and within 40 minutes, you were like, I can't. I got to go home.
Yeah.
I mean, you lasted less than an hour
out
a week.
Yeah.
Before you had to go, your body needed to go either do drugs or go to sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. By the way, sleeping was really restless.
I don't want to shake the physical withdrawal. It was hard. It's hard to watch someone you love go through that. And I to this day have not seen it at that level.
Yeah.
It was hardcore.
Yeah, it was hard. It was hardcore. That was a fucking tough one. And I didn't last very long. I think I made it like a week clean.
Yeah, I mean, it might have even been less than, Also, too, the strange thing is, like, as your friend, obviously you don't want you doing drugs, but it was, like, almost relieved to see you out of that pain.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
It's like, man, it was overwhelming. I'm like, oh, man, I don't want him on drugs, but, like, I don't know what, at this point.
But honestly,
let's just get home.
Being not on drugs
was just as bad.
Trying to just go fucking detox at work was a weird choice. But like, you know.
Didn't you have somebody come out?
There was a sober living guy who came with me, and I think I sent him home after a week, and that was that.
Right. That was just a darker version. But another movie we did together.
Tyrone?
No. That was the working title.
Okay, right.
The final title was Road Trip.
Road Trip. Right, yes. No, Road Trip.
Didn't Todd Phillips
Bad road trip? Trip?
Oh, Bad Trip.
Bad Trip.
And that was about two guys that are driving from, we're going to Mardi Gras.
Right.
From L.A. to Mardi Gras? I don't know. Somewhere to Mardi Gras, and we get lost on a country road, and we run over Coolio.
And Coolio, who had the Oscar-nominating performance, like the actor's dream of playing triplets.
Right. Oh, no, wait a second. So the movie's called, at the time it was called Tyrone, and we run over Coolio, and we kill him, and we find a ring in his pocket. That's worth a lot. And then his sister.
And his brother.
And his brother, Sharome and Jerome, right. Come looking.
For Tyrone's killers.
For Tyrone's killers. And Coolio plays all three roles. You know, Ethan and I, whatever. It was like fun to work together, whatever it was. But like Ethan and I were like, well, this is, we just knew. I mean, it was just absurd. The levels of absurdity.
It was just silly.
It was just stupid. We're getting ready to rehearse. And again, Ethan and I at this point have acknowledged that we're not doing.
It's not Shakespeare.
Right.
Coolio's playing triplets.
Right.
This is not.
But
serious
far movie. From the Shakespeare, like, okay, we're going to do this. Also, we're not going to humiliate ourselves. So Coolio was basically saying to Ethan, I wanted to crawl up. I wanted to fold myself up into a little square, and I wanted to slide under the door and disappear. Coolio in rehearsal says to Ethan, so I'm going to be fucking with you this whole movie because I'm an improver, which is ridiculous.
Right, yeah.
Like some improv, like groundlings genius.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to be calling you. I'm going to be calling you fat. I'm going to be doing this and that. And Ethan's like, no, you're not. And I'm like, oh boy, here we go. I can see the hair on Ethan's neck standing up. Mm-hmm. Ethan was ready to choke the top three characters in the movie.
Yeah.
And again, this isn't like Bill Murray.
Yeah.
Right? Saying like, hey, you know, like, I think there's just no rhyme or reason for it. Like, first of all, you know nothing about improv.
Yeah.
You know nothing about acting in one role, never mind three.
Right. And now you're going
to. And now you're going to.
And by the way,
and it's your, right.
His go-to is just, you're just going to call me fat. That's right, like, right. You're mm-hmm. just every scene we're in, it's going to be fat, fat, fat. Yeah. Fuck you.
Yeah. Right. Ethan shut this idea down in a hot second yeah. in the most awkward and uncomfortable way imaginable. It was painful. And then years later,
yeah.
I would say like 5 years later, Ethan and both of our careers sort of had, you know, taken a turn for the better. And lo and behold, now they're selling this movie.
Uh-huh.
So I went on to Amazon and I bought every existing copy.
Yes. Didn't we watch it?
Well, this is funny. So yeah. I said, Ethan, I got the DVDs. I got them all. They don't exist on Amazon anymore. I've got them. Come on over. We're now 15 years removed from filming this movie.
Yeah.
Let's you and I, nobody else, you and I just come over and we will watch it. We did not make it half. We never finished it.
No.
We made it halfway through the movie. Ethan was like, I can't do it. The director called us and I just, it's so funny. Typically, like, I just ignored the email like I never got it. Ethan, on the other hand, did not ignore this email from the director who, to promote the movie.
15 years later.
15
years
later.
We were children. We made this silly movie. Yeah. And now.
15 years later, they want to do a promotional tour where we're on a stripper bus.
A stripper bus. I have daughters now. And I was like, is this motherfucker kidding?
Yeah.
But again, Ethan is very smart. He's well-read. Mm-hmm. He does it all. Ethan wrote an email that should be like posted up on somebody's wall somewhere.
I just tore it apart.
You did.
Yeah.
You said to the director, are you still stoned? I have daughters.
Yeah.
Do you think 15 years later, I'll get on a stripper bus
right.
and promote? Ethan just undressed this guy.
I honestly don't know that at the time you or I would have been comfortable getting on a stripper bus
teenagers. I wouldn't have done that. You know, I've never liked that kind of attention. I wouldn't have done that anyway.
Yeah.
But 15 years after
But now that
fact,
we're adults and we're like,
you're married
with kids.
Yeah.
I was
Radio,
just like,
yeah, I'll be back. 10:30, 11 o'clock. Coolio and I were going on. What does that even mean?
Yeah. What is a stripper bus?
Right. What is a stripper bus and where are we going?
By the way,
to a strip club? What are we doing?
If he had even called it a party bus, I would have been like, I'm sober, I have children, I'm not doing a party bus. But the fact that he called it a stripper bus, uh-huh. I was like, no, not for me.
Oh my.
Yeah, that you said that in so many words. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think. I was just always trying to think about, it's funny because I sat in for one of your initial podcast, and I was just like listening to you talk, and it kind of jogged a bunch of memories.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I forgot the Chris Farley thing. I remembered the Biggie thing because of the Chris Farley thing, although I think it might have happened after. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It was all in the same
time
era.
Because
yeah.
also, too, like, we met Ethan in 93, you know, but, you know, as your love for your friends grows, by 95, 96, now it's a family member.
Yeah.
So now the intense concerns come in, but also, too, to call you like 2 hours after the news of Chris Farley died on a conference call.
Yeah. Everyone, if we have a relationship with someone and we have certain expectations of that person, then I think that's a fair conversation to have. I do.
Now, but I think at 20,
yeah.
you're already feeling the heat everywhere you go. You're coming into your own as a man,
yeah.
and you're aware of it. So I think now it's a different conversation.
But, you know, I mean, listen, I wasn't a fucking moron, so I think I knew if I list out my goals and objectives for life, being as heavy as I was certainly wouldn't be one of them. It just couldn't have been. What do I want to accomplish? What are my physical needs? I just don't think I often thought about it. And then when it did come up in instances like that, I just rejected it mm-hmm. immediately.
Immediately.
Because if we go down the road of using logic and reason and like examining this, it's a problem. It's an unjustifiable problem. My need to eat Jack in the Box at 4 a.m. cannot be greater than my need to live, however much longer I'm going to live without doing that. It just can't. So I really think I actively was avoiding thinking about it.
I can remember because we lived the deepest in the valley
yeah.
at the time. So I would be the last one to get dropped off.
Yeah.
The other thing too, you were a super heavy smoker.
Oh yeah, chain smoker.
I mean, Ethan would take a drag off of a cigarette and his lungs are so strong and his hands and everything was so strong. You could see like the punishment the cigarette would
rip half a cigarette.
Ethan, like, and if he were mad or something, it was just like he just would rip the cigarette in two drags and then have the ability to put it in his fingers and flick this thing 50 yards across. He could knock somebody out with this thing. It was just, everything he did was with power, you know? But I can remember, I'd be the last one to get dropped off, like Ferg and I.
Yeah.
And I just, I can remember knowing, just based on what time we'd gone out and based on, I was hungry.
Yeah.
Right? I'm like thinking, what do I have to eat in the house?
Right.
Knowing, like, I know he's...
I'm on my way somewhere.
I know, yeah. I know where direction he's going. I know what he's passing.
Yeah.
I know that he's going to be now comfortable, that people aren't watching him. And, like, I was almost willing to bet that you weren't going straight home.
I think that's true. I will also say that I remember when we first met, there were a lot of the nights ended at a Jerry's Deli or a place like that, a Cantor's. And as we became closer and closer, that post-night meal ended. Nobody wanted to have it with me.
Right.
And I think I also partially was uncomfortable at the end of the day ordering two corned beef Reubens or something like that in front of people. But so I would be like, no, I'm calling.
Well, I mean, you're getting the looks, right? I mean, right. It's like, you can't even eat in peace.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I remember that's an interesting thing to put into perspective in that way, because I remember that was like the beginning of our friendship really began in diners at the end of nights. Where none of us were legally old enough to be at bars.
Right, we were caught in that weird thing between like high school and being able to get into bars. It's like 19, 20 years old, you would go to like coffee shops to try to talk to girls.
Yeah.
That was like the early season. I'm talking about after that.
Yeah, after that.
Like when we were going, we would go out to a club.
Go out to the club.
2 o'clock.
Yeah.
Drop me off, and you're like in the car, and I'm thinking like, I know he's going. I know.
My night ended every time. Yeah.
I'm starving, personally.
Yeah.
I'm like trying to figure out what scraps I'm going to pull together in my house. I'm like, there's just no way.
No way.
Right.
It was always, that was my day.
You could also eat in peace and quiet.
Yeah. Right? And I could order whatever I wanted.
Whatever you wanted. No funny looks.
Yeah. You know, you'd get through the moment at the drive-thru of the woman looking to see how many people are in your car who just ordered 6 cheeseburgers or whatever it was, whatever crazy order I had.
It even went to that extent to like, okay, this is the last hump I have to get over.
Yeah.
The drive, the funny look from the drive-thru where you're really like, got halfway, have your middle finger up. Let's get
Once I got my food, and if it was a place I wasn't going to be back at the next night, but often
you're thinking it like, what are you looking at? Don't worry about it. Just give me the fucking
give me the food. Let me get out of here.
Close the fucking window.
Yeah, and if I can make it quicker, I'm going to give you a 20 and just drive away.
Right.
You know, yeah, that was a hurdle. And then the moment I was alone in the car or back at my house, if whatever it was close enough to my house, and then I would eat, you know, alone mostly.
Because it was judgment-free.
Judgment-free, yeah. And not that people were saying anything, but I just felt, I guess that is the place that I knew what I was doing was against what my goals would have been had I flushed my goals out. Had I thought about it, had I gone, what do I want from my body? What do I want my body to be able to do? I was actively working against that. I just wasn't delineating it in that way. I wasn't laying it out and going, I have needs and desires that I'm not fulfilling, you know?
But how many people do that in their youth? You're talking about like early 20s, right? Or through your 20s. Not everybody does that.
I don't think so. I think anybody who is active does that.
Sure.
Anybody who's active will say, you know, I'm going on this hike. I'd like to be able to do it faster. Mm-hmm. Or I play this sport. I'd like to be better at it. I lift weights. I want to lift heavier weights. I want to lift more. I want to hit more sets, whatever it is. I think people who are active have goals. But I generally, I guess maybe not. Maybe people who are not active don't have a lot of goals, unless it's like, you know, I know a lot of chicks want to fit into a dress.
Sure.
That's something
it's like a size
I hear a lot.
Thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But almost arbitrary. Like, what does that mean? Get a bigger dress. You'll fit into it.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother, right?
Thing.
Right. Yeah. No, but it's true. Like, that's like, it's almost like a, yeah, well, yeah. I mean, you talk about goals. Like, I don't know that it's different than the 6-pack thing.
Right.
Like,
no, yeah, that's
pack,
it's an arbitrary goal.
I want to fit in a size 2.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
Is that even right? Am I making that up? Does that sound
about
right?
You're right. You're
yeah.
Right.
Listen, in fairness, I can get a picture of a 6-pack right now today.
Right.
I have enough definition
too, right.
That with overhead lighting,
which we can accommodate.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we'll do that. I also have, for some reason, this number of 10% body fat in my head. Now, here's a really fucking crazy thing.
I mean, do you really want to be 10% body fat?
Well, here's the thing. With calipers, I am 10% body fat. It's the DEXA scan, which is also scanning visceral fat, which is like the fat around mm-hmm. your organs and all this. It's the most comprehensive thing. It's measuring your toes and your ankles and all of this and coming up with the most consistent and hardest number. If you did calipers on me, I'm 10% body fat. But I won't take that. I want the hardcore number of DEXA. And I want to get to 10% in a DEXA machine.
You're on like some next level shit where like,
yeah.
But I think for the regular guy, kind of whatever you want to call it, 9 to 5 or whatever, it's your clothes really, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like you put on your jeans and you're like, wait a second. Whoa, what's
yeah.
going
yeah,
on?
What's this? Yeah.
And that's how a lot of people sort of judge it, I guess, mm-hmm. right? I mean, like a shirt or whatever it is where it's a little bit like, okay, that's weird. Or for me, it'll be with like suits,
yeah,
right? Or like a tuxedo where you know, whatever you wear, this suit, however many times you and you put the suit on and you're almost dreading putting it on. You're like, well, I'm about to learn something.
Right.
That's it. Like, I feel good in this suit as yeah. opposed to like leaving the house automatically going, oh man, right before you even leave the house, you feel bad about
yeah.
yourself.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I, as a little kid, was really into punk rock and like British fashion, but I could never wear it. Like Fred Perry, Ben Sherman, never fit me. So then when I was in my 20s and I lost weight and was riding bikes, the day that a Fred Perry shirt fit me was a big fucking deal.
Yeah.
And I was in their biggest shirt. And then I eventually got down into having room, like, it's not just their biggest shirt, it's one down. So even if I gain weight, I've got a cushion. Then I did ultimately gain weight and couldn't fit it again. And I remember this cycle around of losing enough weight to going into my closet, which was full of all the shit I couldn't wear, and being able to put it on, or getting close and going, holy shit, I'm going to get back into the shirt. And now being back into the shirt and going like, okay, so that's another weird goal, a clothing goal. So I'm sorry if I dissed your arbitrary goal. I think all arbitrary goals are valid.
Oh, no, it's okay.
Yeah.
But I think for most people that aren't on the sort of trajectory that you're on with the levels of, even your knowledge on it, I think for everybody else, that's mm-hmm. kind of like the women will say, I want to wear my wedding dress.
Yeah,
yeah, it's a right? wedding dress or your skinny jeans or whatever right. that thing is that you remember you felt great in that.
Right.
And yes, it equaled some weight on the scale or something.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I think that there's a lot of problems with those, with the way those solutions are sold to people, because especially here, the Hollywood diet is like drinking cayenne pepper lemonade or something like that.
Oh, I tried
right?
that. It's awful.
Yeah,
it's awful. Is that the Hollywood diet, the one with the pepper and the maple syrup?
I think
or whatever?
That's called something else. Okay. But the Hollywood diet is some, I remember
it's a
this.
Juice
it's like a
thing.
Juice.
I know probably, Beverly Hills is all pineapple for yeah. a few days, which yeah. seems really like not a great way to eat.
Well, I mean, but also too, like, yeah, you're going to lose weight if you eat pineapple.
Yeah.
By the way, I'll do the apple diet. If
you're
I only eat apples,
weight.
You're
yeah.
going to lose weight.
That's right. probably the Washington diet, you know?
And yeah. just saying, like,
the orange diet is Florida.
Right. Like, I'll do the ice diet. I'm only eating ice,
yeah.
right?
Alaska.
Okay, yeah, but you're going to lose yeah. the Alaska
we
diet.
We could give, just sell diets from each of these states, you know?
Doing the grape diet.
Yeah.
Grapes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you have a goal. If your goal is, like, I want to fit into this dress, is it that you want to fit into that dress for one night? And you're willing to crush yourself for a week to mm-hmm. do it, and you realize that just depleting your system of water can get you into the dress.
That's a great point.
You know, that's a way to do it.
Right. Are you trying to fit into that dress, generally speaking?
Right.
In general?
Yeah. Might be another way to
summer?
Accomplish that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. Summer body, you got to hold on to for a few months. And a few months is a long time to not fuck off and kill your what you did.
Yeah.
Goals are important.
I think that's a great, just lesson to take away from it. You
yeah.
know, just something. Just have some goal.
Yeah.
Right?
And
to
and
keep
then
you going
think
or motivate.
Right, right. Yeah.
What do I have to do to get?
Yeah. I think it's going to be abs for a minute. And then I think it's going to be like building a pound of muscle. What's that like? Because that requires a whole other way of thinking about it. You have to eat more than you're being active. You know what I mean? Generally speaking, since I've been dieting for so long, I'm not going to have the weird gains that people who haven't ever done a diet get.
You still a CrossFit guy?
No.
You shooting a hole in the CrossFit theory?
I'm trying not to get my heart rate that high to really preserve muscle. I also find that a lot of those Olympic lifts, I don't think they were really designed to be done for speed and for the kind of numbers that they're doing. Like, I do some of those compound lifts sometimes and do them slowly and carefully. Obviously, the snatch isn't slow, but I would never do multiple snatches without stopping and restarting properly. And I hurt my knee doing it. And I've just, everybody I know who's done it for a while has hurt themselves.
It's funny, that becomes with age, you know. I'll play roller hockey in Venice Beach for 4 hours.
Yeah. Right,
at the beach, it's great. You're outside, you're playing hockey, there's all this kind of stuff. Got in my car, went to buddy's house to play pickleball,
right,
which is 1/10 of roller hockey. And I took one wrong step and I pulled a muscle in my calf. And, you know, 4 months later, this morning, I woke up and I was like, man, this is so strange. I really tweaked this thing.
Yeah.
And it just still isn't, it's just, and somebody said to me, dude, like, well, that's what, I mean, like, come on, man, you're not 25. Like, that's,
right.
I wouldn't take that personally.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean your calves are weak. It means you're getting a bit older and yeah. You have to sort of, I think the most common, they said the most common injury for like men in their mid 40s is like pick up basketball.
Right.
ACL.
Yeah.
Torn meniscus, MCL. Like your joints just don't, you know, you're still caught up in that thing where you think you're 25.
Yeah, we got to be careful.
Got to be really careful because you get really hurt. And by the way, to get an injury like that now,
not good.
Be devastating.
Yeah. Yeah. When I tore my meniscus and it was just
a big setback. I mean, for you right now, with what you're doing physically, an injury like that.
No good.
Yeah, well, just would set you back. You're laid up, and then you lose your mojo, and then, like you said, then it's hard to get back in. Come on. You could go to the gym every day for 2 years. You stop for 2 weeks. That first week back, you're like, oh, impossible. Man, this is brutal.
Yeah, yeah. I don't get concerned that I'm going to hurt myself doing what I'm doing, but I have for sure set up my routines that I'm not doing anything. I'm not lifting stupid heavy. Right. I'm taking my days off when I need them. I'm not doing any kind of movements that I, you know.
Well, they say listen to your body as well, right?
Yeah.
If your shoulder is telling you to take it easy on your shoulder,
yeah.
Then take it easy on your shoulder.
Yeah, right? I generally
do. Doesn't everybody say that?
Yeah.
Or like any, it's like a kind of a common theme. It's because all the experts will say something different.
Yeah.
But I think most of them will tell you to listen to your body with regards to that, right?
Yeah, when you work out a body part, the next time you work it out, it better be recovered. Right. You don't want to go into it sore.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's not good.
Mm-hmm. And how do you know, and this may sound so basic, but are you working out with a trainer or how do you know what to do in the gym?
I've been working out by myself, but I've had a trainer.
Mm-hmm.
I've had multiple trainers through the years. So I pretty much just...
At a certain point, you learn what you need to do. It always helps to have a trainer because it's like somebody doing, ironically, like... the dirty work.
Well, yeah, but it's counting also the motivation.
Sets. Yeah. Motivation, and you know, like they kind of cut your breaks in half. But
yeah.
But if you go away to upstate New York for the holiday, you don't really need a trainer. You can survive on your own for a week in the gym.
Right? Yeah. If I was gonna do a role that had a specific type of physicality that I needed to achieve in a certain amount of time, yeah, I would go work with somebody and figure it out because I'm not, that's not my job.
Yeah.
But I've increased my bench press, I've increased my squat, I've increased my deadlift, I've increased the amount of pull-ups I can do, and I basically do variations of those exercises over and over and over, you know, throughout the week.
My mind is racing. I'm glad we talked about the American History X story because that one was on my mind.
Yeah.
And the Cavizzo thing, you jogged it out of my brain, and then I remembered that and was like, it just had steam coming out of my ears. I don't fully understand either one of those, to be totally honest with you.
I know.
There's a few instances over the years that are just like,
it's really weird for me too, because until I was with Brandy, who called me a lard ass one night, it completely changed.
But did she do that as a, I mean, that Brandy could say that and it's a joke.
I don't know. It wasn't a joke. It didn't hurt my feelings. Okay. But I'm telling you, up until that point, it was, I was sensitized to fat, to anything like that. Lard ass would have really upset me.
Yeah. Well, it's offensive.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, it's different in you know, with, it's different to your wife, obviously, right?
So it's right.
Different
like, kind of thing. But like, listen, if you really hate me because I'm a lard ass, you would not have married me. You know what I mean? So I was kind of like, oh, what's this?
Right.
Maybe I don't have to be so sensitive about this. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And now that I have 14% body fat, I really don't care. You can call me fat all you want. By the way, I don't look in the mirror and think I'm thin. You know what I mean?
You look amazing.
Yeah.
You're like in the best shape you've ever been. And not, like, I don't think of you as quote unquote thin. I think of you like You're a big dude.
You're always a big dude. Yeah. Like, that's what I tried to tell. Like, I mean, there was the, you know, I don't know if you remember when we had to pull you off of Jay Ferguson. You guys got into a fight over your camera. Over Ferguson's camera. And there was eight of us.
Yes.
Peel Ethan off, and he was very heavy, but behind that, you know, the weight is strength, you know what I mean? And I don't know if that's from carrying
probably
the frame around, but you've always been super, super, super powerful dude,
yeah,
no matter how you cut it.
I remember that.
Get Jay on here to talk asshole. About it.
Yeah, we gotta have Ferguson come on. All right, cool, thank you for coming
thank
on
you.
Yeah, Paige, thank you. Thanks for listening to this episode of American Glutton. I'm Ethan Suplee, and as always, joined by my chaperone, Paige Dorian. Follow us on Instagram @AmericanGluttonPodcast. Sincerely.